Hey, colleagues, welcome back to the office. Welcome to our podcast and presentation for today. This is Data Talk, Hosting Self-Service and Managed Service Options, Part 1. In our presentation and in this series, we are going to be looking at the different opportunities for taking better harness and control and management of your organization's data, applications, systems, platforms, and more. And in this class, we're going to be looking at some of the major ways that this could occur, whether it be, for example, putting this on your own data center inside of your office in the traditional format, which we would call on-premise, all the way up to and including, for example, moving things to the cloud, utilizing applications such as Microsoft 365, Google, and others. Utilizing what we call software as a service applications. We're going to review a bunch of different options with respect to this, looking at, for example, some different major hosting providers, looking at Amazon Web Services, Centrum, Ace Cloud Hosting, and more. And further along in the class, we're going to go ahead and take a look at different methods of remote access and different methods of getting online. And what does it mean, for example, to be remote? And what kind of hardware and or software that should we be using with respect to being able to operate and be able to work effectively wherever we happen to be? And this is a two-parter. In the first section, this is what we're going to cover. In the next section, we're going to go through some specific examples and methods, and looking further in on some of the different ways that we can manage our data more effectively for our organizations. Today's class is a recording from a previous State Society conference, so we're going to go ahead and jump into that here in a minute, and then I'll join you afterwards for our review questions. Now, before we jump into that, I do want to remind you that if you are a financial professional, you can earn credits for watching or listening to today's podcast. It is super simple, and all you have to do is afterwards head on over to cpetoday.com, take a short 5-question quiz, and you can earn a credit for today's class. It'll take you 5 minutes, maybe even less than that, and you'll be well on your way to maintaining your professional license. In addition to our podcast, CP Today has a whole bunch of amazing, exciting, and entertaining, and dare I say, educational courses for all types of financial professionals, whether you're looking to improve your skills with Excel, understand the latest updates with respect to tax and accounting, and more. You can find it at CPE Today. Today's course code is DHS1. So if you're searching around for today's quiz, that is what you would provide. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started here with our video for today. I'll join you back at the end of our presentation. We'll do 3 quick review questions, and then we'll go ahead and get you on your way. Thanks for being here and enjoy our presentation for today. So, just like our own atmosphere, the cloud has some different levels, and working in the cloud doesn't mean one thing. It means different things to different organizations and different companies, and we can operate depending on our organization down here or all the way up here, anywhere in between. There are kind of 4 main levels of the cloud that we should be familiar with. There's the traditional way of doing things, on-premise. We have IaaS, or Infrastructure as a Service. We have PaaS, Platform as a Service, and the highest level of the cloud, SaaS, or Software as a Service. Now, what this chart illustrates in blue is the services that you, your organization, would be responsible for making work inside of your organizations. In terms of the stuff that you would have to buy, acquire, manage, take responsibility for. And on the traditional way, the on-premise way of managing things for our companies, you'll notice that everything is blue. And that means we would be responsible for literally every aspect of our company's technology infrastructure, from building the network, configuring the storage, setting up the backup, configuring the operating system, certainly installing the applications, security, and really kind of everything in between. As we start to move to the cloud, though, you'll notice that some of these items turn from blue to gray, and gray would be the things that are managed by the vendor. And the lowest level of the cloud, and my personal favorite level of the cloud, is Infrastructure as a Service. Now, this distinction, we'll talk more about it here in a minute, is that a provider would take care of all of the physical infrastructure, and my organization would be responsible for all the logical or software side of the infrastructure. So in this particular level, we would work with a common provider such as Amazon, Azure, Rackspace, and more. They take care of the network, the storage, the physical servers, and the virtualization, and then we can configure the operating system, any sort of applications, data, and everything else in between.
At the higher levels of the cloud, we become responsible for less and less. At platform as a service, we're only responsible for the applications and the data itself, meaning we just choose what applications we want to run, and we are responsible for ensuring our data is available. At the software as a service level, we're responsible for nothing. Essentially, we show up at the beginning of the day, and we continue to work and continue to operate, and every bit of the application stack is managed by a vendor. And this is what we see a lot of applications being offered. You know, a good example of this would be our good friends QuickBooks Online, or it could be any of the Google products, and many aspects of Office 365 are essentially managed by that vendor. We are not responsible for anything. Essentially, we show up, we work, we operate, and they take care of everything else. And if it doesn't work, well, really, that's not on us. It's on the responsibility of the provider to ensure that it works correctly. Now, the lowest level of the cloud, infrastructure as a service, is mostly focused around hardware. The service provider owns the equipment, they including the storage, the hardware, the logical layer, and the servers themselves. So they're responsible for all the physical aspects of operating this. They take care of the housing, they operate it, they put it in their own data center, and they take care often even the licensing, for example, for the operating system. When we utilize, for example, Amazon Web Services or Microsoft Azure, and we're utilizing a Windows server, well, guess what? Amazon is the one who is paying Microsoft for the rights to use that. Now, they're passing the costs on to me, the consumer, and the organization responsible for configuring that, but they're the ones ultimately paying the licensing, and they just pass that on to me in the hourly fee. Your major providers here are the big boys, the Amazons, the Azures, the Googles, the Rackspace, and others. And I really like this level because it gives me, as a technology professional, maximum control over the infrastructure. I could choose exactly where I want it to be located, whether it be in Amazon, for example, in the Oregon data center or in the Virginia data center, or even Cape Town, South Africa, or Sao Paulo, Brazil, or Frankfurt, Germany, or Ireland. And then I can be responsible for all of the aspects that actually make it run and work the way my organization wants it. So this is the level of cloud I personally recommend because it's the best combination of power, feature, functionality, and at a price point that I find to be quite compelling. Now, there are many other aspects of the cloud that we can consider. For example, there is facilities as a service. You know, this is a term coined by Hewlett-Packard, but other companies have been using this. And in this particular case, you know, HP will go out and build a data center pretty much to spec. HP will maintain the ownership, but it's essentially operated for a single customer. You know, and eventually it's kind of like a lease to own. In that particular instance, you know, this is a good option for very large organizations that want to have complete control over something, but maybe don't have technical expertise to run it themselves. We have platforms as a service, and this is increasingly becoming popular where organizations want to still maintain control over the applications, but they want to be responsible for less and less, where the provider, in this case, you know, Salesforce or Microsoft or Zoho or others, they are responsible even for the operating system and the actual configuration, the security, and you're just responsible for the application. For those of you who are maybe looking for a really good technical example of this, this would be utilizing services such as Docker or Kubernetes, where Docker essentially allows me to focus just on the application and the actual runtime of that application is managed by another provider. And I just load my Docker instance and they take care of all of the other work that goes along with it. Now, we also have software as a service, or SaaS. And in this particular example, we're responsible for practically nothing. In this example, most of the services that we're going to be consumed are delivered through a web browser, a dedicated mobile app, or what we call a thin client. And in this example, we just do the work. We're not responsible for any aspect of the operation, the development, the security, the backup, or anything else that's involved with actually running it. It just works or it doesn't work. Now, most of these applications are delivered through your web browser. They're delivered through Google Chrome or Microsoft Edge or something else like that. And Examples of this are pretty much any browser-based website that you go to. You know, for example, Zoho One, Google Workspace, Microsoft 365, Thomson Reuters Inovo and Checkpoint products, which are for tax preparation, as well as CCH's Access products and QuickBooks Online, Xero, FreshBooks, and many others. If there's a website that you like going to that you utilize, and maybe they have a dedicated mobile app, that's a great example of a SaaS-based application. And increasingly, this is becoming the way that we're seeing most software be developed. You know, as a professional software developer who makes applications for other companies, this is how we build software now. You know, I haven't built a traditional thick client installable app in many, many years, and I don't anticipate building them in the future. This is just easier for the developer to be able to maintain and to grow their application. And it's easier for the client because they don't have to take on as many technical resources to make this work effectively. Now, often with these browser-based applications, they run in what we refer to as a multi-tenancy environment. Now, what does that mean? Now, a computer can do a lot of things. And most people, when they're utilizing their machine, they're utilizing just a small fraction of that machine's available resources, a small fraction of the processor, a small fraction of the memory, so on and so forth. And with multi-tenancy, it gives us the ability to build concurrency both in the applications, in the databases, as well as in the hardware. And it allows for a single instance of a application to be available to multiple organizations at the same time. You know, let's use QuickBooks Online as an example there. You know, when Intuit gets a new client, they're not allocating a new QuickBooks instance to every single client, like a new physical hardware, a new physical server, or even a new instance of the actual application. Rather, the application is designed to be able to support securely multiple clients running on a single application and a single server at any given time. Data remains private to each organization, but the application itself is shared. This is extremely efficient because we get economies of scale, both in terms of the software itself, as well as in the hardware. And this delivery method has allowed for really fast growth of cloud applications and widespread adoption. And this is how we design software for the most part. You know, whether it be Google or eBay or really kind of any other application, realize you're not the only person utilizing it. There's sometimes hundreds, maybe even thousands and millions in certain examples of the largest applications out there of companies using these cloud resources. So I'd like you to keep that in mind as we talk through some of the major aspects of the hosting and shared options for your organizations is the fact that you do have some decision-making and some flexibility with respect to how and where your organization builds its cloud deployment. You know, whether you choose to do it on-premise, whether you choose to use it with a hosting provider or a public cloud provider like Amazon or more, you have a lot of flexibility with respect to where and how your data sits and how it is operated. Let's go ahead and take a look at our next section here, which are going to be some trends with respect to hardware and software. And these trends are going to affect our ability to be able to work anywhere. Now, when you're getting started with your hosting projects and you're starting to evaluate different options that are out there, you're going to have a big decision. First, do you want to outsource this or do you want to do it in-house? Now, if you choose to outsource this, this means moving to a provider that is going to ultimately take responsibility over custodianship of the remote access and the data itself. And this can be beneficial as well as negative, depending on your context and depending on what you're looking for. Some of the benefits of this is that it's rather turnkey. You know, let's take, for example, hosting QuickBooks for your organization, the traditional version of QuickBooks, the QuickBooks Desktop or Enterprise. Well, if you were to utilize a service such as Centrum, Ace Cloud Hosting, Right Networks, or more, it's a pretty turnkey experience for you. You call them up, you tell them how many licenses, what you're looking to do, they configure the resources for you, and you're off to the races. It essentially just works and operates with you really having to have no investment in hardware or any technical expertise to be able to do this. You know, for some organizations, that's great. I mean, yeah, it might cost you a little bit more compared to what you would need to do if you were to do it on-prem or to build your own infrastructure or to use a hosting provider like AWS. But at the same time, not having to have that headache can be quite useful for a lot of companies. It gives you the ability to fix your costs. Sometimes those costs are higher or lower compared to what you're currently spending. But what I will point out to you is that the cost that you're paying includes a lot of different things. You know, it's not just the price of the hardware and just the price of the software. I always recommend that people, for example, factor in the peace of mind that comes with the fact that they can pick up their phone and call somebody if it's not working. You know, if you don't have in-house technical expertise, this can be very beneficial to your company because that peace of mind, knowing it's going to work on April 14th, is probably very important to you. When you outsource this, scalability is usually not your problem. If you're utilizing, let's say, Office 365, and you grow from one user to 100 users to 1,000 users, you know, I don't have to think about, oh man, do I got to go out and buy more hardware? No, I don't. I just allocate the licenses, set up the accounts. It's Microsoft's problem to be able to scale accordingly. And for the most part, with most of these cloud-based providers, AWS, Rackspace, Microsoft, and others, scalability is infinite from the context and perspective of the end user. There's redundancy, there's resilience, there's capacity built into your infrastructure. You know, from my perspective, that is incredibly helpful. If we think about traditional risk management inside of an organization, you know, for a system to be considered reliable, it has to have three different types of backups in three different locations. That's very difficult to achieve for a lot of organizations and expensive too. You know, that type of redundancy, if you're talking about hardware, could be a lot of unused capacity just kind of sitting around in the event that you might need it. However, if we outsource this, if we utilize a cloud-based provider, we can build resiliency and redundancy in our infrastructure with pretty much no thought and no extra work. As a good example of this, when I build infrastructure projects for clients utilizing AWS, I could build wherever they choose to put it. You know, so if they want to, for example, put their server infrastructure in the Oregon data center, great, I can configure and build that out pretty quickly. You know, if they say, you know what, I'm kind of worried about Oregon falling off into the ocean, can we build in resilience? Great, I can literally back this system up to whatever other availability zone that the customer would like. And Amazon has about 20. I could put it in Virginia, I could put it in Northern California, I could put it in Brazil, I could put it in Germany, Ireland, or wherever else they choose to put. And I can have it just sitting on standby for almost little to no cost compared to the traditional way where I would have to come out of pocket for that additional equipment and then find somewhere for that equipment to live in a separate geographic space. Because again, for that resilience to be there, we need stuff in multiple locations. Hosted solutions come with what we call a SLA in almost all circumstances. An SLA is a service level agreement, which is a stated agreement between customer and provider, which will talk about what they can expect with respect to downtime. Most providers, ours included, we search and build for what we call five nines of resilience and uptime. So that would mean it is 99.999% up and available for whenever the customer chooses to use it. And that equates to minutes of downtime per year. That's what you could expect, you know, from a major provider. To say that you're never going to have an issue or an outage is irresponsible, but it's going to be far less than if it's a server sitting in your local office that's going to be subject to local issues such as power outages or internet outages or something else. Additionally, it gives you a bigger perspective of security, understanding different perspectives, having different people with different specialties can be very helpful. In our company, for example, we have different people doing different things. I, for example, am responsible for most of our Linux infrastructure, and I have a lot of experience working with Linux and Linux-based systems. My partner, on the other hand, he's really good and responsible for our Windows-based infrastructure. And you can't be an expert in all aspects, but the fact that we have two different people working with two major different types of operating systems gives us perspective and is going to give us a much greater control and greater insight with respect to how to secure our systems for our clients. Now, as great as hosting is, there are some benefits to in-house and choosing to do this either on-premise, if you're actually going to be building infrastructure out that way, or if you are going to use your in-house team to build infrastructure in a public cloud like AWS or Azure. Often, if they're your people, they're going to have dedicated and intimate knowledge of your business operations and the people behind it. Experience is so important in terms of knowing how the company operates so that you can build things in the correct way for that company to be able to be successful. It gives you the ability to be very reliant on your existing team. It gives you the ability to bring in flexibility as well as control and responsiveness, ultimately because you control the assets, the people who are actually doing this. You know, I can't force AWS to do anything. I can't force a hosting provider to do anything. You know, I have to work with them and I have to hope that my priorities and their priorities are aligned with each other so that we ultimately get the service that we are looking for. If they're my people, it gives me the ability to be able to control them and be able to focus our recovery efforts on the highest needs of the organization. However, what I will point out, security expertise varies. Often in-house folks are really familiar with their own systems, but maybe don't have a wide enough knowledge to understand some of the other major systems and security issues that might pop up. Versus if we have a team of people, you know, their experience can be quite varied. Now, as we look at our cloud, we have some must-haves as well as some nice-to-haves or better-to-haves. Now, we need to find, for example, a good hosting provider. That provider might be a private cloud. It might be a SaaS solution or stack. You know, that is a suite of solutions that focus on a particular provider and their software. Now, in terms of the better to have, would be things like multi-factor authentication, some different home network appliances, as well as backup redundancies with cellular hotspots. Let's go ahead and dive into each of these and learn a little bit more. Now, on the hosting side of this, what we're talking about is running apps and storing data on third-party hardware and accessing these assets over the internet. Now, the way we access this could be through a number of different methods. We could use remote desktop protocol. We could use Citrix. We could use a web-based, browser-based control, a mobile app, or more. And in this particular scenario, we're working with an application service provider. This service provider is providing a specific application and the way that we want to utilize it so that we can consume those services. Now, apps can be built and can be optimized for this particular approach, and sometimes not so much. There are plenty of examples of traditional thick clients, and a thick client is something that is installed on that network and installed on a local computer as a traditional application that might not make it optimized for delivery on the internet and in a streamed capacity. Good examples of this are the QuickBooks Desktop or QuickBooks Enterprise or any of the larger accounting suites of the last generation. You know, these particular tools are, you know, fantastic solutions, but they were never designed to work on the internet. They were never designed to be optimized for a 6-inch screen on a handheld device that people walk around with. Good news is, even though that they're not optimized this, most of the time they'll work just fine. And what we can do is we can utilize a hosting provider. You know, a couple of great examples would be Centrum, Right Networks, Ace Cloud, Welcome Networks, and others to host our data, to host these different applications, and then we access them through the remote desktop protocol. So that application now will be cloud-based, although we're using an additional protocol, an additional application in front of that application in order to be able to accept it and be able to work with it. I'll give you an example of that here in a little bit. Now, we can go with what's called a private cloud. In a private cloud, we will build and design essentially our cloud built to order. This typically requires an upfront cost as well as ongoing hardware cost, and we will physically buy infrastructure, servers from HP or Dell or somewhere else, and then we will put them into a data center somewhere in the world. Most of your major telco providers, Verizon, AT&T, and others, have offered this service for many years. And it's been cloud hosting for a lot of these companies, you know, but not in the traditional sense of what we understand the cloud to be, like utilizing a Google cloud or an Amazon cloud. They were using, for example, Verizon data centers. And if we think of cloud as just accessing resources on the internet, well, yes, in fact, this is cloud-based. And so in this particular example, it's our hardware, our software, our network gear. It's just running in somebody else's appliance and somebody else's infrastructure. And we're just paying them an operating fee for the cooling, the power, and the internet access that goes along with this. Some larger firms, for example, will use this, as this has a typical higher performance at a lower cost of per unit. And they will be able to operate these in facilities such as level 3 communications or for example, in Verizon or AT&T and other facilities around the world. In a lot of these instances, these are maintained by what we refer to as MSPs or managed service providers. It can be in-house too. So if you have your own people, they can maintain this infrastructure for you. Now, this is a good approach where you have relatively static demand and you can buy the capacity and then essentially put it into a data center and continue to operate it. It's your equipment. You have control over it. But, you know, essentially it's running somewhere else. Another benefit of this is it can be recovered quickly in the event of an outage. You know, you just call the provider, say, hey, I'm coming down. I got a major problem. You can work from their facility and be able to update that equipment as needed. Okay. Now, this does carry, for example, some physical risk. It's not a true cloud provider in the sense that, yes, these servers physically can be stolen, although in practice, that is quite unlikely. Now, my personal favorite is software as a service, and this is what most end users think of when we talk about cloud computing. They're familiar with the eBays and the cloud. They're familiar with the Bank of America's and accessing their online banking, or the Amazon's and accessing shopping, or Facebook and more. You know, these are the way that we access most of these web 2.0 and 3.0 applications. There's really kind of nothing for us to do. We open up the browser, we go to the website that we'd like to utilize, and it just works. Or increasingly, we open up our mobile phone, we browse to our favorite application, you know, and we open it up and it just works. And in the truest sense, there's really no software installed locally other than the browser, or if it's on the mobile device, the dedicated mobile app. And pretty much every major service provider is moving towards this, whether it be Salesforce with their Force platform for customer relationship management, or Bill.com for their AP management, FreshBook for their AR management, and more. Most of these applications are going to be cloud-based. Now, for our cloud-based and hosted applications, it's absolutely imperative that we implement security at a very deep and robust level in order to be able to keep our organizational information secure. Increasingly, data breaches are becoming a part of normal life, and we don't want our organizations to face that particular risk. And thankfully, if we implement just a little bit of security, we take this seriously inside of the organization, we're going to be able to reduce our risk to an acceptable level. We can't necessarily eliminate that risk, but what we can do is that we can work to bring it down to a mitigatable level where we're able to operate and get the benefits of remote work while keeping our information safe and secure. There are lots of examples of multi-factor authentication apps. Some of my favorites are listed right here. Cisco's Duo, Microsoft Authenticator, Google Authenticator. I'm also a big fan of LastPass Authenticator. The reason I like the LastPass Authenticator is that it integrates with my existing LastPass account. So it's a great example of synergy between two different applications. Whatever app you choose to use, just choose one of them because it will make a big difference in the overall security for yourself and your organization. Now, you also want to use good hardware for your home network. Lots of different options to choose from with respect to different hardware appliances, but some of the major categories of things that you're going to want to have for your home network would be certainly a router, some sort of firewall, a switch, wireless access, as well as some sort of anti-malware for your network. Now, when it comes to your router, lots of different choices. I'm a big fan for home networks of the Netgear Orbi solution. The Netgear Orbi solution is a Wi-Fi 6 mesh-enabled network that provides really fast, high-speed internet access throughout the entire home. And the beautiful thing about it is that it's all wireless, with only a single device needing to be tied into your internet service provider. You take the two satellites, you put them around, you know, maybe one in the kitchen, one in the bedroom, you know, and then you have full high-speed internet access throughout the entire property. Other devices I like a lot. I've always been a fan of the Ubiquiti devices. I've always been a fan of Netgear devices. In fact, inside of my home, I have a Netgear 26 port gigabit switch, and it works really, really well for me, distributing Ethernet throughout the entire property. When it comes to malware, anti-malware solutions, I've always been a big fan of Trend Micro. That's been the solution that I personally used as well as recommended to my clients. Now, building redundancy in your internet access can be really, really important. As we start to move to the cloud, you create a concentration risk with respect to access to the network and access to the internet for your computer. If you can't get to the internet, you often can't do anything. And from my perspective, that's an unacceptably high risk. You know, especially if you have people working in a central office, you're going to want to spend the extra $100-$200 a month to have a redundant internet connection, because if the internet goes out, you know, 20-30 people sitting around, man, you start thinking about the payroll dollars there. That could be quite expensive for no return. Now, one of the best things that you can do to help improve redundancy inside your organization is to use a cellular hotspot. And you have a lot of different options from pretty much every internet service provider and cell phone provider and equipment provider has an option that you can choose to use. Now, in my personal life, I'm a Verizon guy, and I have the Verizon MiFis. I have the older generation of this one. It's still 4G, and it works just great, and it's what I travel with most of the time. I haven't gotten the 5G yet, mostly because 5G is not available in my area, and even if you had a 5G hotspot, if the cell phone tower that you're connecting to is 4G LTE, there's really kind of no benefit. You know, we're going to see a slow rollout with 5G. It's not going to be widespread and ubiquitous for at least a few more years. Now, you should ask yourself, what type of remote work are you providing for your organization, and what type of experience are you looking to provide? Now, we have two different types. You have work from home and work from anywhere. And although they are very similar and there's a lot of commonalities between them, there are some significant differences between them that you should be aware of. When we work from home, we're not talking about working from anywhere. We're talking about working from a specific discrete place, often with more permanent infrastructure. Instead of using, for example, cellular networks for connectivity, we're using the home broadband connection, which is typically going to be a coaxial connection. And we also typically can also build in things like a static VPN back to the office. On the other hand, we have work from anywhere, our truly mobile workers. In work from anywhere, we need to build in additional security protocols in order to provide better security throughout the organization. And we also want to think about some additional configuration options to allow for good experience from anywhere, like the local Starbucks to the client office and more. Now, work from home is probably what most folks will end up doing. You know, we might work occasionally from the client office. We might work occasionally from that Starbucks. But most of the time when we're talking about telecommuting, we're talking about really kind of just having a home office and working from that home office. And for myself and for my organization, we all work remote. You know, we've got about a dozen staff. Everybody works from home. You know, I'm not saying they couldn't work from the road or they couldn't work from their local Starbucks, but working from their home is what we've primarily done. And so we've, for example, set up the specific tools and resources to allow them to work productively from a single location. This has given, for example, the ability to get larger tools, faster tools, more monitors, bigger computers, better, you know, more permanent like keyboards and mice rather than the more mobility focused. And generally, we found this to work really well. And also things like communication speeds are going to be better when you have a static internet connection. You know, mobile workers work from anywhere or anytime, any device, in any place, the AAA method. This focuses highly on mobility. You know, it's generally not as reliable, but still pretty reliable, generally slower. But thankfully, due to technology advances like 5G, it's getting better. Generally, this will have more security issues, but they're not insurmountable as long as you know what you're expecting and you can plan for them. Additionally, some of the tools are a little bit more limited due to size limitations. Now, for me, myself, I actually have two different setups. I've got my work from home setup as well as my work from anywhere setup. And just depending on where I'm going and what I'm doing in a given day will depend on which environment I'm choosing to work with and what set of equipment I will operate with. Now, what type of hardware you want? Well, from your work from home and your mobile, the biggest difference between this is really going to be size. You know, if it's your work from home, it's desktops, it's large monitors, it's still solid state discs. You're still going to want a good smartphone. You're still going to want a good HD camera and microphone. But these are typically going to be more permanent. You know, on the other hand, you know, if it's a mobile worker, we focus on, instead of a big desktop computer, a powerful and portable laptop. Maybe you have a external, but it is a USB portable monitor. Again, still solid state. Instead of having a dedicated HD external camera like we have here, we'll have the one that is built directly into the camera. Instead of having an external mic like we see here, we might have a headset with a dedicated mic on that headset. Or my personal favorite, if you're a mobile worker or a desktop worker, both of these deployment methods can benefit. I'm a big fan of these USB speakerphones. This one is made by Jabra. It's about $100, and I love them because not only are they really crisp and clear, the echo cancellation on them make them great. And often I find myself where I can't wear a headset all day just because it bothers my ears. I can use that speakerphone all day. And if you're in a relatively quiet environment, that speakerphone really is a godsend. We typically have more permanent external devices like permanent scanners, printers, copiers. Mobile devices, we have to improvise. You know, I have, for example, in my office, a dedicated dedicated printer and scanner. You know what I end up using more often than not for mobile scanning, or really kind of any scanning, is my cell phone. There's a great app for iOS called Scanner Pro that works really well. As well as SharePoint and Adobe Acrobat DC have great scanning apps that you can use to digitize any documents. And even though I have a dedicated scanner here, I often use my mobile phone just because of how convenient it is. On the power side of this, certainly things like an unstoppable power supply and surge protection. Mobile side, we've got to think about things like saving our battery life and surge protection to prevent our devices getting fried in the event the electrical current varies widely. For our home, we're wanting permanent firewalls, permanent switches, permanent Wi-Fi. In mobile, we're working more off of, you know, infrastructure Wi-Fi at our local Starbucks or our hotel using things like cellular. Certainly, if we're going to be utilizing this service, we're going to want to be using things like VPN as well as multi-factor authentication and virtual private networks. Speeds will vary anywhere from, you know, I would say on the lowest end, 50 megabits by 25 megabits per user, all the way up to gigabit based speed. Mobile users, on the other hand, you're really going to get what you get. And that's just often the crux, I think, of a lot of mobile workers, is the ability to be able to get online. So, you know, if you're looking, for example, for an external camera, I would definitely recommend some of the cameras that support the Windows Hello technology. Windows Hello technology allows you to be able to do passwordless login to be able to access your computer without having to put in a specific password. This is fantastic because not only is it more secure than, for example, utilizing a password, because you don't have to physically type something in and you don't have to remember it and maybe choose a more insecure password, but it's more reliable because it just uses facial recognition technology to be able to scan your face and be able to let it in and prove who you are. There are a lot of different options to choose from with respect to external cameras. And I will point out that in a recent update from Windows, in the most latest service pack at the time of this recording, actually enables external cameras to utilize Windows Hello for that facial recognition and scanning. However, a big requirement of this is that that computer has to support Windows Hello on itself to begin with. And unfortunately, there's not as many options that you can consider. There's a Lenovo camera that will support this. There's also a Logitech camera that will support this. And if you were to ask me for the one that I think would be the best, I'm a big fan of Logitech devices in general. And they've got the Brio camera, which is a pretty good experience for running business-grade communications. Let's take a look at it. So here is the Brio external webcam. It offers in 4K, pretty pricey at $199, but overall, this is the best of the best, and it's pretty easy to travel with as well. Really good, crisp and clear quality, and it does support Windows Hello. So there you go. And this would be a great camera to consider if you're looking to get an external camera that will also support that Windows Hello service. Now, what type of options do we have? Well, if we're looking to do this centralized, we certainly have some hosting options, for example, using Right Networks and utilizing Ace Cloud Hosting and others. We can build it ourselves utilizing infrastructure providers such as Amazon Web Services and others. And we can also go with a managed service option where we just pay somebody and it becomes their problem. Now, on the other side of this, we could choose to go with a SaaS-based silo or stack-based approach. In this particular approach, we typically would go with a vendor such as CCH or Intuit or Thompson, one of the major accounting and tax provider that has a lot of applications central to management of a financial services firm. And in this particular example, we're going to be using specific vendor-based applications that may or may not be the best or what our firm actually wants to use. But no surprise, Intuit's going to offer Intuit products, Thompson's going to offer Thompson products, and CCH is going to offer CCH products. There's also a variety of SaaS-based productivity suites. The three that come to mind are going to be Zoho One, Google Workspaces, and Office 365, again, with each vendor supporting only their applications. There are a variety of DIY and different approaches, but I will point out they can be quite difficult to do. Now, in terms of architecture, what this actually looks like for the organization. Currently, most of us are operating in some level of the cloud, but it's not really the cloud. We have our different apps that we're looking to utilize, and then we combine it with remote access technologies, such as remote desktop connection, or RDP, RDC. And these apps get virtualized on a server combined through some magic, and then we end up with what we call a VDI, or virtual desktop interface. Now, the VDI is a great stopgap with respect to working in the cloud, but in a lot of respects, it's more of a crutch than anything else. It is a stop along the road of our organization moving to the cloud. What we ultimately want to get to is kind of what we're looking over here with our future architecture, where we're utilizing native cloud services that were designed from the ground up to be able to utilize the cloud at a very deep level. Okay, so Office 365, 100% cloud-based, designed and operated in the cloud. There are certainly desktop tools that get installed, like the traditional version of Office will get installed on your computer. But most of the magic sauce in the background that makes Office 365 great is cloud natively. So we're going to combine the other aspects of running our organizations, maybe practice management, maybe tax software, audit software, engagement software. These would be delivered through what we refer to as browser or SaaS-based application, giving us ultimately something that could be distributed and utilized anywhere in the world by any person. Now, one of the strategies that we're seeing right now, for better or worse, are siloed-based applications. Okay. And there are lots of different organizations that are offering multiple different applications as part of their platform or as part of their service offering. Zoho, for example, has over 40 different online tools that you can use to run your business, from customer resource management to finance to employee expense reimbursement, desktop productivity, email, and more. Acumatica has a whole line of solutions all built around enterprise resource planning. AWS has almost 100 different applications and services now as well. Okay. Now, what you often end up with is, you know, if you choose to go with a more silo-based approach, you end up in a situation where maybe each application isn't the absolute best of what you're looking for, but Zoho, Acumatica, or AWS is taking care of all the integration, security, authentication, and work that goes into it that just kind of make it a really attractive offering for no other reason than just not having to deal with the headache of having three different clouds working in three different ways and three different data centers. In the future, what we're working towards is integration between these different applications to allow you to be able to choose the best of breed for whatever you're looking at, and then allow for data to be able to flow. Just like the water in our home flows through the pipes in our home, we have these digital plumbing tools like Zapier, Power Automate, custom integrations, APIs, that will allow data to flow in between these different applications with little to no work on our side. You know, so we might, for example, utilize Google Workspace for things like email and calendaring. We might utilize Office 365 for SharePoint and Teams. We might utilize Zoho One for its customer resource management and more. We might use different suites of applications like Acumatica for ERP or QuickBooks for accounting, so on and so forth. We might have a lot in AWS or Azure that provides our hosting for all the different apps and services that we use or that are not being provided directly by the vendor. What connects it all together are these digital plumbing tools that allow for the data to flow from one side to the other without the user having to double key or be responsible for data entry on multiple systems. Now, if we look at this more of a CPA form, level, you know, so think, you know, small practice, medium practice, where you're typically using the solutions and products of a specific vendor, really, you only have three options in 2021. You could take an Intuit-based approach using Pro Series as well as Lacerte, one or the other. You could take a Thompson-based approach utilizing UltraTax, Practice CS, File Cabinet CS, and others. Or you can take a CCH approach utilizing their access-based technology, okay? Well, when you choose to use Intuit, you're using all Intuit products, likewise with the other two that are listed there. Now, you might really like, let's say, UltraTax CS for tax prep, but you might really like using QuickBooks for no other reason than that's what your clients use and it makes sense for you to utilize it as well. Or you might like some of CCH products, but you really want to utilize maybe Thompson's practice management solution. Well, at the moment, there's no easy way to be able to get data in and out of these different solutions. In the future, you might utilize best of breeds of these different applications. You might utilize, let's say, Office 365 for its base desktop productivity for email, calendaring, SharePoint, Teams, and more. You might utilize CCH's Access Tax products or Thompson's Inovio or Intuit's ProConnect. And you might utilize, let's say, Azure for virtualizing all the other apps. These digital plumbing tools will allow these different components to work together and to bring data under one roof. Now, if you're going to go for the centralized approach, in terms of hosting, there are no shortage of options for you to choose from. The big players are going to be your AWS, Amazon Web Services, Azure, Google, and Rackspace. And really, from my mind, there's really only two that you should be considering, and it's AWS and Azure. I tend to be definitely more focused on AWS, although I use Azure quite regularly. AWS, in my mind, is not only the best option, but the most cost-affordable option as well, in the best features and functionality. Azure is a great offering. It tends to be definitely more expensive than AWS, and it's definitely Microsoft-centric. AWS, on the other hand, you can run anything. You know, they don't have a vested interest in whether or not you use Linux or Microsoft technologies like Microsoft does with Azure. AWS is what we build all of our applications in for our clients because we know it is the most complete offering. They have everything from their EC2 platform, which is that elastic cloud compute, which allows me to build and configure virtually any type of service or server for my client anywhere in the world, to their S3 product, which allows me to be able to create backups of client infrastructure almost instantaneously. You know, Azure, again, very well suited. It's just more pricey and it's not nearly as feature rich as what you would get with AWS. Now, if you choose to go the self-hosted side of this, self-service side of this, you're going to be buying your own infrastructure, including servers, networking gear, and more. And in that approach, most of the time, you're going to go one of three ways when it comes to the actual software. You might be utilizing, for example, Citrix to virtualize and stream the apps, or you could use the VMware Horizon application. You can actually do almost all of this directly in Windows with their hypervisor Hyper-V as well. Now, if all this sounds Greek to you and you have no idea what I'm talking about, well, this is going to be a good example of when you're going to want to use a turnkey hosting provider. As a guy who builds this and that researches this and writes this stuff, I can tell you there's even things almost every single year that I'm learning, and we're changing how we do our different deployments, and we're staying on top of this. For a lot of organizations that choose to go the public cloud route and configure this themselves, often they face security issues, usability issues, servicing issues that are not easily overcomable if you don't have good technical expertise to be able to manage it yourself. That's when I would recommend using a turnkey hosting provider. And there are no shortage of great options, starting with Centrum and Ace Cloud. From my experience with the many different firms I've worked with over the years, both of these services are very good at catering to the needs of financial professionals. And in fact, that's what their business is designed to do, is to really kind of focus on the financial professional and building a suite of tools and services around them. And what's nice about these companies is they have a full service providing side of their company. You know, if there's a problem, you can pick up the phone and call somebody. You can't do that with Azure. You can't do that with AWS. It either works or it doesn't. And just like there's professional software like Access or UltraTax or Lacerte, and there's an expectation you know what you're doing when you use these applications, it's the same with these hosting providers. AWS is not designed to be a friendly, let's get started and learn how to use the cloud tool. It's intended to be a professional tool for people like myself that work with this stuff every single day that know what they're looking at. Centrum, Ace probably utilize a fair number of AWS resources in the background, but they're going to make sure it works for you and they're going to take the brunt of the setup so that you don't have to. Realize there's also turnkey providers from the software vendors themselves. I'm a big fan of the Thomson Reuters Virtual Office product. My family's accounting practice are longtime Thomson Reuters fans and longtime Thomson Reuters users. And we've used the Virtual Office for over a decade now with a very high degree of success. And Thomson just essentially hosts all of the Thomson products in their data center in Dexter, Michigan. And my dad's firm just operates just like they would any other cloud application. But Thomson is responsible for essentially ensuring it's up to date and available. The nice thing about that is it's their software, their people, and there's a lot of nuances with respect to tax software in terms of updates and getting it to work correctly. I just think, you know, utilizing the provider itself takes a lot of headache away for you, and you don't have to patch and update the software on your own. There are also some, for example, some dedicated QuickBooks desktop hosters as well, which I've got listed here for you to consider. Now, a question that usually pops up here is, what's this going to cost? And really, the prices run the gamut in terms of low to high. A biggest thing is going to be how many users, how much infrastructure is going to be required, how specialized software you're going to run, things of this nature. Now, I've got some example prices here, and these are total costs amortized over 60 months with the assumption of about 100 users. Now, if you did this in a private cloud, you know, where you buy your own infrastructure and you completely control it, that's probably going to be about the cheapest you can go for at about $200 per month per user. Okay. Now, if you go with a hosted solution, that goes up to the highest of about $319. If you choose to manage this in AWS, it's $297. And likewise, if you were to go with a publisher like Thomson or CCH, you can expect $241. So you'll notice all of these, in my opinion, are quite expensive for what they do. And that cost is representative of not only the hosting cost, but then also typically the software acquisition, like your 365 licenses or the other specialized software for accounting and tax that you might need. But I also want you to know that number also includes other intangible benefits that are not easily represented by math. You know, a good example of this would be peace of mind. You know, what's it worth, for example, knowing that your data and infrastructure in a top tier hosting provider that are going to be managed and it's going to work, you know, when you need it to work the most. You know, it doesn't matter if it works in August, it needs to work in busy season in January through March for many of our financial service firms.
Colleagues, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed our presentation for today. Let's go ahead and finish up with our three review questions, and then we'll get you on your way home. Okay, our first question here. What cloud option gives an organization full control of their cloud hosting services? Is it on-premise? Well, you know, if it's on-premise, it's probably not cloud, unless you're a really big organization, you have your own data center. So I'm going to go ahead and say probably not that one. Is it platform as a service? No, you have less hosting options or less deployment options there than you probably do in other ways as well. Is it software as a service? Nope. You got the fewest options there as well. Correct answer here is going to be infrastructure as a service, or IaaS. Infrastructure as a service is utilizing companies such as Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, and others to perform your hosting duties. And the beautiful thing about it, they take care of all the hardware stuff, you take care of all the software stuff. And that's where the line is drawn in the sand. If it's something that can be configured virtually, and like the operating system, the applications, the data, the backup, it's on you. Okay, so it gives you tons of control over your cloud hosting options. And if it's anything hardware related, like the actual physical hardware, like networking, cables, cooling, power, that's on them. Okay, our next question. What does the acronym SaaS mean? Okay, is it storage as a service, a method of leasing computer hardware and relating the storage on an on-demand basis? Nope, not that. Is it sales as a service, a method of hiring salespeople to sell for your firm on an as-needed basis? No, it is not that either. The correct answer here is software as a service, a method of renting access to software and applications on a perpetual basis that you can run. You don't technically ever own it. You lease it, you pay for it per month, but you get updates, service support, and everything along the way. It's a great option for both client and company. All right, our final review question. A firm adapting all SaaS products would be implementing what kind of software strategy? Would it be a single suite? No, not necessarily. Would it be a data hosting strategy? No, not necessarily. When you are typically adopting all SaaS products, you are adopting a best of breed strategy. That does bring us to the end of our presentation. So what did we learn today? Well, we talked about some different hardware and software trends and their importance as it relates to working remotely. We talked about how some of the major integration pieces are changing and how there's different types of remote options available to us now, what methods that we choose and for the different applications that we choose to work with. We also identified some major update strategies and opportunities for choosing the different providers of technology. In the next episode of this class, we're going to talk about the different and differentiating between the different security risks of implementing these different solutions and how are some of the best ways that we can mitigate these risks. We'll also talk about some of the impact of virtual work to the environment to help produce and get more out of our company, as well as to improve productivity overall. Now, as our final reminder, if you are a financial professional, you can earn credits for today's class. The material is free. The certificate is so easy to acquire. If you liked our materials today, head on over to cpetoday.com. Use course code DHS1. You'll take a short 5-question quiz and you will earn a credit for today's course, and you'll be well on your way for maintaining that professional license. In addition to purchasing the certificate, you can get a DRM-free copy of the learning materials. You can ask questions, you can engage more and learn more. Besides our podcast, we have dozens and perhaps even, dare I say, hundreds of other courses that are available for you to help stay on top of your professional game. So whether you are a CPA, an enrolled agent, or something else, head on over to cpetoday.com and find your next learning material. If you like our content, please consider following us on social media. You can find us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and more. We're always trying to post relevant and useful information to the industry, as well as tips, tricks, and other videos that can help you stay on top of your game. And you can always listen to the CPE Today podcast live, usually twice a week. usually Tuesdays and Fridays. But if you can't make it, no worries. You can listen on demand. Head on over to your favorite content production network, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, SoundCloud, or more. You can subscribe and get us straight to your inbox whenever we release a new episode. It's a great way of staying on top and knowing everything that you need to know to be the best financial professional you can be. Thank you so much for your time and attention. It is always a pleasure being with you, and I'll see you back in the office another day soon. Take care.